This is episode 49 of Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. And it's been a little while since I've been able to do a podcast. Things have been crazy busy. An educator's life has ups and downs in it, and one of the ups is report card time, which is happening right now. So it's been a little bit crazy in terms of doing my day job. And then the boys have baseball, so every second night and on the weekends, I'm out with them. And to be honest with you, by the time I get home, put them to bed, get things ready for the next day, there's nothing left. And I've mentioned that before on the podcast. So if you've heard my episodes, you know kind of like what my life's about. But I'm really happy to be back on tonight. And episode 49 is a good one. I would say it's as good as the others, but I'll let you judge. So my guest this evening is Lee Castle. And Lee has, when I think of Lee, the word elusive comes to mind. Elusive. And it's not, so people might be thinking automatically something negative, but it's not. So let me explain before I get Lee to jump in here and talk to me about what motivates and inspires her and the amazing work that she does. I've heard about Lee several times. Her name has come up at a GAF summit in Kitchener a couple of times where I've been fortunate enough to go participate and present. Her name has come up at the Teacher Learning and Leadership Program, which I've participated in and I get to speak at as well. So every year for the past couple of years, Lee Castle's name keeps coming up. And so here's the elusive part. Lee is never in the same room when her name comes up. So the last time your name came up was at TLLP in the fall, and Michelle Cordy was doing the closing keynote, and she mentioned you. And I'm looking around like, okay, where is this Lee Castle? Because I would love to say hello and connect face to face. And then, you know, somebody's like, oh, she's not here today. And it's like, oh, she's not here again. So I hear Lee Castle and I think elusive, just because people mention you, they talk about you, they've got amazing things to say. And it's one of those things where it's like, well, I would love to meet this person face to face, because in some way, shape, or form, Lee has been connected somehow to the tribes that I belong to, but we've just never kind of connected aside from Twitter. So I thought it'd be great to talk to Lee about the work she does and a couple of cool things that she's up to these days around Canada's 150th birthday, and we'll let her explain. So Lee, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I don't think I've ever been called elusive before, but I do love mystery. So I like that you chose that word. Good word choice.
Well, there's a first time for everything, right?
That's right.
So Lee, oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Tell us, what do you do for a living?
Well, I'm a mommy first. And as we talked about earlier, we're both hoping our kids don't crash the party tonight. So yes, full-time mom. But when I'm not being a mom, I work for the Avon-Maitland District School Board as a technology coach. So my role is to support tech-integrated learning in K-8. Which I absolutely love doing. I'm also founder and president of the Digital Human Library, which is a not-for-profit organization connecting Canadian classrooms to experts and organizations around the world who offer educational programs or career talks, or who are available basically to support and further student inquiry using video conferencing technology. So I have this really fantastic resource that where I focus on using the power of technology to make the kinds of connections that you were speaking about in your introduction. I mean, we've connected today after meeting on Twitter, and now here we are having a chat, and I think our next step is absolutely a face-to-face.
I love that you talked about being a mom first, because that is such, well, it's all-encompassing, right? Like, yeah. And I've talked about this on the podcast before. Once you become a parent, that's it. Like, it's, you're on all the time, every day. So that was really cool that you described yourself, your first job is full-time mom. The tech coach position, this is a position that colleagues of mine and I have kind of coveted. We've always, it's like other boards have a tech coach and our board doesn't. And it's like one of these things that we're always kind of hoping will creep into our system. How long have you been doing that kind of work?
I have been, actually, you mentioned TLLP, and that's my role evolved out of 3 years of TLLPs, actually. I started working on a project, my first TLLP, actually the very first TLLP I applied for was with Michelle Cordy, and we were denied. And our hearts were broken, but we forged ahead. And my next TLLP, which I wrote, it was a few years ago now, 5 or 6 years ago now, was an opportunity for me to work with a group of teachers and explore how we could use a social media platform, specifically Edublogs, to support and further student learning in literacy. But our big focus was developing the 21st century competencies that we speak of so much today. And that TLLP grew the following year and grew the following year. And because of the amount of uptake in my system throughout that work, I was offered a full-time job supporting blogs as digital portfolios in my system. So we started with 10 teachers and our classes that first year. And by the third year, there were over, I think it was about 4,500 or 5,000 student blogs in Avon Maitland being used to document student learning, support student inquiry, of course, immerse kids in a literacy-rich learning environment. The whole digital portfolio piece just, it blows my mind what a powerful tool that is for teaching and learning. So that's how my job actually started. And now my portfolio is quite large now. I support the Blogs as Digital Portfolios piece. We're a one-to-one school board from grade 7 to grade 11 this year. Mm-hmm. So I support that piece as well. Coding and robotics is part of my portfolio, new literacies, and then the connected learning piece that we'll dive into today.
Wow. Okay, so how many people in your board do the same type of work you do?
Well, it's changed over the last few years. When we started the one-to-one initiative in grade 7 and 8, there were 4 other tech coaches that were employed to support that work. At that time, I was strictly supporting the Blogs as Digital Portfolios piece. And into the second year, those 4 coaches continued on. And then this year, their positions, unfortunately, were cut. And some of those coaches moved into math roles, supporting math, the renewed math strategy that we know is going on here in Ontario.
So are you the only tech coach in your board now?
I'm the only tech coach in elementary. Oh, actually, okay. Technically, I'm the only tech coach. I'm the only person that has that title, but I do work with one other woman and she's the TELT in our system. So she supports more of the secondary piece and I support more of the work happening in K-8.
Yeah. Okay. And before you became a tech coach, what did you do in education?
I taught for 11 fabulous years at Stephen Central Public School. I taught grade 7 and 8 for about 5 years. And then 1 year I decided that I should try teaching primary. So I moved from grade 8 to grade 2. I don't ever recommend anyone doing that. It was mind-blowing, to say the least. But I spent the next 6 years teaching kind of grades 1 to 3. It just depended on numbers. And I love my little people. But I miss my big people too. So I love sort of both ends of the spectrum.
Okay. I have a feeling I'm going to ask you a question and it's kind of loaded and I have a feeling you're going to answer it very diplomatically, but I'm going to ask anyway. Between okay. Intermediate and primary, if you had to go back right now, which one would you jump into?
Actually, I would choose intermediate, and that brings us back to the very first thing I said when you asked me that first question. And it's because I'm a full-time mom and I have little people at home. And I spent grades 1 to 3 with little people at home is, for those who have done it, is very exhausting. It's really hard to be around young children for the entirety of your day. So I would actually probably go back to intermediate for that reason, first and foremost. But secondly, I spent a lot of time in primary, and I think I'd like to go back now that I've all of my skill sets have evolved, and see what I could really do with a group of intermediate kids.
Okay. That's exciting. I mean, I understand what you're saying. I taught primary for many years and now I'm in junior.
Yep.
And I miss primary, but I love the capacity that's been built in the juniors and what mm-hmm. they can do. And so it's like just watching them unleash themselves on their learning is amazing. But I do miss being with little kids.
Yeah.
So every now and again, I will step into a primary classroom at my school or even kindergarten just to kind of get that fun feeling back a little bit.
Yeah, there's such different, it's such a different experience, right? Like teaching intermediate, mm-hmm. the focus is, for me, was building relationships with those kids. And it's a lot more challenging, right? You have to earn their mm-hmm. respect. It's a very different, it's a different kind of relationship. Whereas, I mean, I walk into grade two and the kids love me because I'm their teacher, you know, right. I don't have to work at those relationships, in the same way that I do at the intermediate level. But what I love about primary is the growth, the growth that you see between September and June is it's exponential. Mm-hmm. And it really is, it's overwhelming where these kids start that first day and really where they end up at the end of the year. And I always challenged myself and challenged them to see like, how much can you really do? What are you really capable of? Like, let's find that limit. To really challenge them. And, you know, when I tell people that, you know, a grade one student can work a full administrator's dashboard in WordPress and embed YouTube videos and tweet and do all these things, they're like, but they're six. And I said, yeah, they are, but they have this incredible capacity to learn. And I don't think we challenge our little people enough. I think there needs to be a little more push.
I can't disagree with you. It's been my experience that when you give the students the time they need to do what it is you want them to do or what it is they feel they need to do, and you just give them that time and you support them, they can do it.
Absolutely.
And that, like, you just brought me right back to my time in primary, the last few years working with the tech integration in the room and the social media, mm-hmm. the kids were amazing. They just needed the time. They needed to build that capacity. They needed the support. And then the things that they created and the way that they worked together was just unbelievable. And that's what I miss, that power that you're referring to.
Yeah.
So generally speaking, what motivates and inspires Lee Castle daily?
People like you. People like you who want to, that was the right answer, right?
I'm going to take it. That's for sure.
Honestly, what inspires me, it really is. It's these kinds of opportunities that are created through the kinds of work we do in education. And I put myself out there because I'm always fascinated to meet new people. Actually, just the other week, I reached out to Doug Peterson. I said, you know, I see you on Twitter all the time. Heather Dernan talks about you. Can we just meet and have a conversation? Mm-hmm. I don't really have anything in particular I want to talk to you. I just want to hear your story. And so what I love is that, especially in education, people are always interested in your story. And so to be able to just to connect and have a conversation and learn about other people is just very fascinating and interesting to me. One of my favorite quotes, by Bill Nye, the Science Guy, believe it or not. I have certain feelings about Bill Nye, but I love what he said. And it's that everyone you ever meet knows something you don't. And mm-hmm. That to me is such an important way to go about your day, because you never know what the story is, you know, what the story is. You just never know, what people are going to have to say. And anyway, I'm rambling now, so I'm going to stop.
No, it's good. It's good.
It's the people.
Okay. It's right up my alley. I mean, getting to talk to people that you'd never get to connect with because of geography and,
yes.
and just real life, things are happening so fast, but yet you and I can take a little bit of time on this evening to chat using the technology. I think that's amazing. And for me, that's powerful. Mm-hmm. It motivates me, but I'm really happy that it motivates you as well. And I love that little story that you told us about Doug Peterson about, you know, you hear about him, you're always kind of like, connecting with them on social media. So it's like, why not just send them a message and connect? You know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely. And I work with new people all the time because we have this incredible technology to connect, and the relationships that have come out of these connections. And I mean, they're ones you never see coming, right? You get blindsided mm-hmm. sometimes, and the next thing you know, this incredible relationship has started to form, and now you're creating together and you're doing really incredible things. And everything we do and all these conversations that we have are really focused on one thing in my mind, and that's doing what's best for kids, creating better opportunities for the kids that we're mm-hmm. responsible for. So the more relationships we can build and the larger our network becomes, the more resources we have to support the things going on in our system, in our school, in our classroom.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for that. And that allows us right to perfectly segue into A Kid's Guide to Canada. I want you to tell us a little bit about, like, I know I'm looking at the Twitter page right now. You know, the little profile you have here says it's a national project marking Canada's 150 plus by inviting all JK to 8 classes to connect and build a new era of intercultural understanding, empathy, respect, and hope. I would love to hear about how this came to be. I would love to hear about what's currently happening.
Absolutely. Well, and this actually is a nice, your question really connects back to what we were just talking about. And it's the power of technology to connect. It's the same reason I started the Digital Human Library. And A Kid's Guide to Canada actually evolved from a relationship that I developed with Kathy Beach. Kathy Beach came up with this brilliant idea to create this interactive guide to Canada created by Kids for Kids. And she sent a tweet out last year, I think it was in March or April, and through actually a series of conversations with colleagues of mine in different parts of the country, on a range of topics, led me to Kathy. I was actually having a conversation with Rola. It ended with Rola, and she said, "Have you heard of A Kid's Guide to Canada? Kathy Beach just tweeted this out. Do you know Kathy?" And I said, "No, I've never met Kathy." So I went on Twitter and I looked her up and I followed her and I saw this tweet and I thought, "Kid's Guide to Canada, that sounds right up my alley." So I sent Kathy a message and said, "Hey, I would love to learn. Here we are again. I'd love to hear your story. Tell me about you. Tell me about A Kid's Guide to Canada. I think maybe this is something that I'd like to be a part of." And after our first conversation, you know, I said to her, I want to do this. I want to be a part of this with you. And here we are. So I've actually, the funny part of the story is Kathy and I worked together online only for over a year before we actually met face to face. And the first time we met face to face was at the Connect conference this year. So we actually worked via video conference and shared Google Docs and, you know, any Twitter for the last year, never meeting face to face. And this is the project we have built this amazing project, never having shared, been in the same space, which I just find amazing. We've worked with a national team virtually for, you know, the better part of a year. And it's technology is just really what we can do with it, not what it can do, but what we can do with it is so, mm-hmm. so powerful. So, we've been working together, as I said, for over a year. A Kid's Guide to Canada launched officially in January. The project takes place in three parts. So kids, we're encouraging classes to start off with three different kinds of activities. And the first activity is helping kids discover their genius. We had the pleasure of working with Angela Myers this year. She's been a fabulous supporter of A Kid's Guide to Canada. She did a webinar with us talking about genius matters, because we want kids to figure out what it is that matters to them. And mm-hmm. and by doing so, we're empowering that student voice, right? We want kids to find that voice, because that's a really important part of this project. And we're then asking kids to engage in some activities that teach them cross-cultural communication skills, because as you know, Canada is a very multicultural country. And then we mm-hmm. want kids to also have conversations about digital safety and digital citizenship, because they're going to be working in online environments and they're communicating online. And there's a lot of skills, as you know, that kids need to learn and need to be taught when working in these kinds of environments. So that's the first part of the project, or these preparation activities. The second part of the project focuses on community introduction. So here's where we want K to 8 kids creating artifacts that that represent their culture, their local neighborhood, their community. And those artifacts are going to be shared on an interactive map of Canada. They are being shared now, hosted by Esri. And this is the multicultural, multilingual guide to Canada. And this guide then acts as a resource for kids not only in Canada, but obviously outside of Canada as well. And what we want kids to do is, with kids, right? It's not teachers. We want kids to go to the map and learn about other classes across the country. So the map is completely searchable. It's interactive. You can submit videos and movies and links to blogs and websites where all of these incredible artifacts are being shared. So as you cruise the map and find different classes that you want to learn a little bit about, once you've found some of those classes, the last part or the third part of the project is about making cross-Canada connections. And so this part of the project then has teachers go to the Digital Human Library, which is the teacher registry for A Kid's Guide to Canada. And they're going to use the library to actually then find and connect with the classes that they learned about on the interactive map. And what we want to see happen at the end of the journey is that classes are now talking to each other. We want them to have these face-to-face virtual conversations, and we want them to engage in conversations about what it's like to live in their part of Canada. Collectively, those student voices really have the potential to build that new era of understanding, empathy, and respect. And we really want to draw upon the strengths that and student voice to bring those conversations forward.
The three parts that you mentioned, all of those parts are listed like on the website where teachers can go to get started?
Yep, absolutely. If you don't want to commit to a registration, you can go under the teachers tab and read the details, and the whole project is laid out. I actually just tweeted out the, we have a little footpath that really does a nice job of summarizing all of those three parts that I just mentioned. And there's no requirement or commitment above and beyond actually creating the artifact and posting it on the map, which can be something as simple as a class drawing a picture, a teacher photographing that hand-drawn picture, filling out the artifact entry form, and it's done. So it can be something that you spend 30 minutes on, or if you want to do all three parts of the project, you could spend an entire year, you know, and hopefully years to come continuing on with those using the map and then engaging in those cross-Canada connections.
Okay, so I just tweeted that I'm talking to you and that my mind has been blown. The fact that you two have created this on your time, never having met face-to-face, like until recently, is just amazing. And it speaks to the passion and the dedication that educators have and what they can do these days with the technology that's available to us to make all this happen. Like, it's amazing what you've created and what's happening. And so that's the mind blown part. Like, it's, you and Kathy are wonderful models for people who are out there listening to this, who are wondering, you know, I've got this idea and I'm not really sure what to do or how to do it. You two took something and now you're executing, you're making it happen, and you're connecting people. And not only are you doing that, but you're building understanding, empathy, respect, and hope in our future, which is completely amazing, because isn't that what we want to build in our students every day? Isn't that what's going to make them better people later on and today?
Absolutely. And I know that there's so much conversation around what's come out from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And that's essentially what we're quoting, Action 63.3, which is, you know, to help build a new era of understanding, empathy, and respect. But, you know, if that's the way we should do business. That's the way we should go about our day. And those are the kinds of values and character attributes that we want our kids to have. So, you know, this project has been, you want to talk, it's been mind-blowing for me. I mean, I meet every Monday night with teachers across the country who are committed to making this project a success, because they understand what kinds of opportunities this project will create for kids. And that to me, I mean, I get goosebumps when I talk about it. And when I see those teachers every Monday, and I try to tweet out every Monday after our meeting now to say, like, these amazing people are why this is happening today. And we also have people provincially and in the territory supporting the project as well. Like, it's a grassroots teacher-led initiative. I mean, we do it because we love it. Absolutely. Yeah. It is awesome. Can I tell you something else? Can I tell you something else that's super exciting that happened today?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So one of the other pieces that we're offering classes through A Kids Guide to Canada are special activities. And so this is kind of like a bonus. When you're a part of A Kids Guide to Canada, you can take part in these special activities. And so we host weekly challenges every week. We've done a community quilt. We've done photo challenges, audio challenges, which you would love, like sharing an audio recording mm-hmm. of your ideas, mystery challenges. But today we hosted our very first ever Kids Meet Canada webcast. And it was so exciting because six elementary classes from British Columbia to Newfoundland today introduced their people, their local community to a national audience of K-8 classes watching from coast to coast. It was so exciting. And so today we demonstrated that kids from kindergarten to grade 8 can actually contribute to our future in a meaningful way by meeting and actually getting to know each other across geographic and language and cultural differences. It was mind-blowing today to be in that space and watch these kids talk to each other. And I mean, this comes back to why I started the Digital Human Library. It's all about seeing past those walls in your classroom and the geographic boundaries by which you feel constrained. It's about thinking about and imagining the possibilities, and then there's a way. There's always a way to make it happen, right? I always say to my own children, there's always a way to solve your problem. If you want to make something happen, there's a way to do it, you know, and it's working and connecting with people, and it's been amazing. So I'm on a high today. I've got all these great things going on today. It's been so awesome.
Great. And it's rubbing off.
Yes.
Like, I can feel it.
Oh, you can feel my energy.
I can feel the energy, and I know that after we're done talking, you're going to jump into a Twitter chat and you're going to just ride the wave until you hit the sack. And I can't imagine how you're going to go to bed with all this energy, but I'm sure you'll burn it off, right?
I hope so.
I'm glad that you referred to the Digital Human Library several times. So, okay. Now that I think back and I reflect on my connection to you, I discovered the Digital Human Library before I knew who you were. I remember I was sitting in a committee meeting or something and somebody brought it up. And so every time I see it, like, I never made the connection that you were behind it. So, and I didn't know really that it was connected to A Kid's Guide to Canada. So please take a moment and tell us a little bit more like in depth. You've already talked about it, but I'd love to hear the backstory behind Digital Human Library, how it came to be, and the perfect fit that it appears to have with A Kid's Guide to Canada.
Yeah, it really is it's a perfect fit. So it was about 2011, I started experimenting with video conferencing in my classroom. So the Avon-Maitland District School Board is covers a huge geographic area. So we're a largely rural school board, which means that we don't have the same kinds of opportunities to take kids on field trips that that you might, right? If you work in a city school. And I mean, the financial burden of a field trip within the some of the communities that I work in, I mean, that itself is just too much in itself. So what I started to do is look at how I could create different kinds of experiential learning opportunities in the classroom without actually having to take my kids anywhere, because there was nowhere for us to go. So I started looking at connecting my kids with other classes just to get my feet wet and to have some conversations and just sort of feel out the whole process, right? I mean, that's a huge learning curve for anyone. And especially back in way back in 2011, we didn't have Google Hangouts and a lot of these free platforms that we have available now. I mean, when I was having conversations, it was about clunky hardware, like Tanberg units and Polycoms, and we need this hardware so we can try to talk to people. So it was much more challenging then. Skype was out there, and that was the platform that I was using at the time. So we were connecting with classes in different countries, and I soon became so addicted to to the whole process. I stopped creating content and delivering content. I started spending my time looking for classes to connect with because it was so much more engaging and interesting for my kids to actually talk to people who live in communities around the world instead of listening to me talk about places that I know nothing about and I've never been to. And for me, I was actually learning along with my kids. So that positioned me differently in my classroom too, right? I'm a partner in learning now. I'm not the provider of content. So my whole thinking about what could happen in a classroom and what my role in the classroom could be, should be, was really starting to change. We ended up in a very short period, probably 3 or 4 months, connecting with classes in over 14 different countries. And my, you know, quote unquote, communities around the world unit had done a complete 360. And we, you know, we traveled around the world and we literally traveled around the world and met kids everywhere. And it was the most incredible experience I ever had. So from there, I thought, if we can connect with kids, we can have these conversations with anybody. So I started to look for experts in different content areas. And we were learning about mammals at the time. So I thought, you know, I said to my kids, if you could talk to anybody about animals right now, who would you want to talk to? Well, they wanted to travel to a zoo. So I found a zoo that wanted to talk to us. Mark McAllister, who is still a great friend of and colleague, offers incredible programs through the North Carolina Zoo. So Mark and I started experimenting with this kind of programming. You know, he was offering content as a content provider, and I was that classroom that he was experimenting with. And from there, it really became my passion to, again, we're back to that whole idea of reaching out and connecting with people. And the whole purpose is to create an educational experience for kids that's going to be meaningful and exciting and purposeful. And so the Digital Human Library came to be shortly thereafter. I had this collection of, I'd curated this collection of people that wanted to work with kids. So I started sharing that collection in my school and in my school board. And then I tapped a friend of mine to helped me learn how to build a website because that was something I'd never done before. So I took that upon myself to learn how to build a website, supported, of course, and here we are. So now I have hundreds of experts in all curriculum subject areas that want to connect with kids, and it doesn't cost anything. They're all doing it for free. That's the best
and
part.
And that's the best.
That's the best
that's the
part.
Best part.
And no one believes me. No one believes me. No, okay, so it's free now, but then I'm going to have to pay. Like you're going to charge me. No, it's just free. And even when I talk to the experts, I have the same I actually spent a year convincing an organization that at no point were they ever going to have to pay. It took me a year. I had meetings with all of these different people at all these different levels because nothing is free. Nothing is free anymore. So yeah, it is absolutely free.
Okay, I'm listening to you talk about this, and again, I'm sitting here thinking, holy cow, what am I doing with my life? That's what I'm thinking over here. But I'm gonna put that aside because one of my life rules is to not compare my beginnings to your endings. That's not fair, right? Because you've put in time, you've put in energy, and so it's not fair for people to be like, oh, look at what Lee's doing. Honestly, because you like, look at what you're doing here. You're putting in time, you're putting in energy, you're making things happen. So, but I mean, I'm sitting here in awe thinking, wow, this is awesome stuff. So number one. Number two, I can't help but wonder, so I'm going to ask you, how has this transformed your teaching practice? Because there's no way that you're still the same teacher you were before you started doing all this.
Absolutely not. And you know, someone actually said to me, like, what would you do if you went back to the classroom and there wasn't, you didn't have any technology? There was no internet connection. And I didn't have an answer. And very rarely am I left speechless. And I was speechless because it completely transformed everything. Like I said to you, I started that integrating video conferencing and sort of, you know, playing around with it that first year introduced me to the power of inquiry, asking my students, what do you want to learn? Because, you know, I had started picking different countries and I thought, well, why am, it's just, it's random and kind of arbitrary in the sense that, you know, well, one here, one there. So I started asking my kids, and it wasn't because I thought, oh, I'm going to move to an inquiry-based model of learning. It just happened. It just organically happened. I started asking my kids what they wanted to do and what they wanted to learn. And, you know, coincidentally, year after year, my kids ask, they ask questions that lead us through the curriculum, but they also ask so many more questions that extend beyond the curriculum. And that's where I've really seen inquiry as such a powerful, powerful way of teaching and learning. And as I mentioned earlier, inviting experts into my class, I mean, it got to the point where I was video conferencing. Like, there were some weeks where it was every day. Like, we were working with people every day. And so you can't go home and plan the night before. Like, it doesn't necessarily work that way, because the conversations and the learning evolve out of the conversations and the learning that happen in the moment. So I again moved away from being that provider of content to that partner in learning, because I didn't know what we were going to be doing or where we were going to be going, mm-hmm. or what kind of questions we were asking. So you know, moving to that learning partnership with students, you know, shifting to an inquiry-based model of learning, integrating technology in a way that's teaching my kids how to network. Which, you know, had you asked me this 5 years ago, I obviously wasn't here in my thinking, but I recognize now that networking really is probably one of the most important skills we can be teaching kids in school, because anytime we want to learn something, these connections, like you and I have connecting today, having a conversation is that's how we prefer to learn. Communication it's a social process. And so immersing kids in experiences that are, you know, social, where there's a relationship piece that could evolve, in my opinion, is one of the most powerful ways to engage kids in learning. I mean, relationships are how we learn. So that's a really big piece for me, is that networking piece and that relationship building piece. You know, and plus these kinds of interactions via video conference, your kids are developing their communication and collaboration skills. They're being challenged to think critically in a way that I wouldn't necessarily be able to challenge them, because I'm not the expert, right? Mm-hmm. I have my expertise, but as elementary teachers, we are generalists. And so, you know, why wouldn't I want my kids, why wouldn't I want to connect them with experts in those specific subject areas? So when they ask the questions, they get the best possible answer. I mean, that to me is, or they discover it together. That to me is what it's all about.
It's powerful, and it's the way of the future. I mean, it's what's happening today. Mm-hmm. I'm like you. I believe that the kids need to be exposed. They need to become, you know, competent in these areas, because this is the way it works. And when you were talking a little earlier, well, not a little, like a minute ago, 2 minutes ago, you had me reflect on a recent experience I had. I took my kids, not my kids, I took the school kids to a track and field meet with another teacher. And, you know, every like 10 minutes, I'd be connecting with another teacher from the crowd. They'd be like, hey, there's Chidiac. They'd come over. We start talking. And the students in my class who were there kept saying, like, how do you know that teacher? How do all these teachers know you? And I said, well, you know, like all the YouTube videos we've been making for people, all the hangouts we've been having, all the things we tweet as a class, and the way that your teacher uses Twitter to connect with other teachers to benefit my learning and your learning. They're like, yeah. I said, so now what you're seeing are people realizing, oh, I'm in the same place as him. I should go over and say hello and chat a little bit. And they were, their minds were boggled. Like when they got back to school, they said, you'll never guess who we saw and who Mr. Chidiac connected with. And the kids that didn't go didn't believe them. They're like, there's no way he connected with like eight different people in an hour. Yep. And they're like, no, he did. All the people we've been connecting with all year long that he's not really seen face to face, they came face to face, and it was amazing to have that connection, that real life connection that's kind of been built and supported using the technology with, you know, with the Google Hangouts and with the YouTube videos we make and we send to other classes and things like that. So I think, I mean, for me, and I know you'd agree, there's no going back. Like, no. I can't teach now without having those tools in my toolbox. And if they were taken away from me, then I would have to dig deep and find a way to make it happen. Because now that I've stepped into that realm, I don't see that it would be, you know, ethically right to step away now that I've stepped in, knowing the power, knowing the engagement that the students experience and the learning that comes from it for them, and the discovery that there's a lot out there.
Yes.
And so they don't have to limit themselves. They're always open to what could come next or what's going to happen next. And one of my favorite things this year has been talking to kids about their future. And the way that they're talking about their future is they're saying to me, you know, this is something I'd like to do, but I don't know if this is going to be around in 5 years. I don't know what new is going to come out. So I'm going to remain open as much as I can for things to just pop into the world or for me to create. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. Because when I was a kid, it wasn't like that. It was, oh, I could do this, this, or this. And if I can't do any of those things, then I better find another job because I have to work. Whereas now it's like, no, you can create your future. You don't know what's around the corner because of all the things that have come around the corner. So I appreciate you sharing your stories. I appreciate you sharing your journey because it's, number one, helping me reflect on my journey. I'm making some good connections, which is the selfish piece of this podcast. But you're also providing a lot of information and indirect mentorship for people who might be listening that aren't sure how to go down this road, or maybe they haven't and they want to do it, or maybe they have. And now as they listen to you talk, they feel like a little bit more empowered to go out and to continue to do this and to, you know, really integrate it into what they're doing in their classrooms. The last big thing I would love to talk to you about is, again, about motivation and inspiration. And it's more about you helping others with motivation and inspiration. And it's a tough question when I ask it, you know, the guests aren't really 100% sure how to answer it. So when I ask you, Lee, just go with the flow and answer it, which in any way that, you know, makes you feel good about what you're saying or what really resonates with you. But if somebody came up to you and told you that they really weren't feeling motivated or inspired, what might you say to them to kind of help them find a path to something that motivates or inspires them?
I would ask them what makes them happy. I would start there. I would start with a question about what makes them happy. And I think none of us are going to feel motivated or inspired when we aren't, when we're not in a situation where we're drawing on our strengths and we're, you know, and we're feeling, we have to feel passionate and connected to what we're doing. And a prime example of that is, I mean, this is a perfect time of year to make this connection is talking with teachers, about their greatest, like what's your assignment, right? What's your school assignment going to be next year? And I've sat across from teachers who have said, you know, I'm an artist. I want to teach art. And next year I have grade 4 and I'm teaching rotary math. Or you talk to that teacher who is so passionate about math and they're teaching intermediate literacy, you know, and I think, wow, how can we not honor? And this, you know, working with Angela Myers this year really inspired me to ask those questions first. Because when we, that's why I've been successful, because I know what makes me happy. I know what I like. I know what inspires me. And it's like I said at the very beginning, right? It's meeting people like you. It's the conversations and the learning and the relationships that evolve out of the work that we do. And the relationships we have with our children, our own children, but the children that we teach are very special, but it's not the same as the relationships that we have with the other adults in our building, the other adults in our system, or, you know, anywhere really in the edusphere. And it's these kinds of relationships, being connected with teachers who have those similar passions, that I think drive us to do more and be better. Because if I wasn't surrounded by incredibly talented people, and if I didn't have the relationships I have today with those people, I wouldn't be where I am today. So that's my answer. How'd I do?
And thank you for your answer. I think it was great.
Okay.
I think it was awesome. It's one of my favorite questions, because I never really know what people are going to say. And I love the things that people are saying. I mean, how can you not? Everybody's got a different story. Everybody's got a different past. Everybody's got a different like trajectory in where they're going. And it's so awesome to hear it. And I've gotten to do this 49 times now. Mm-hmm. So I'm loving every minute of it.
Well,
it has been a... Oh,
before we wrap up...
Go ahead.
Can I ask you the same question?
Sure.
Have you answered this question before? Have people asked you to answer that question as well? I'm sure it's happened.
I don't know if they've asked me about this question. A couple of people have hijacked the podcast and asked me questions.
Yes.
I don't recall the last person who may have asked me this question.
Okay, well, I would like to ask you this question.
Okay. So for me, it's along the same lines as what many of my guests have said. It's what got you into this in the first place?
Yeah.
Like what, I want you to take the time to think about what brought you here. Mm-hmm. Was it, somebody tapping you on the shoulder and saying, I think you'd be really good at this? Was it, and I'm going to talk education. Was it a teacher that did something for you that then you felt you needed to do for others as well? It's just going back to what got you here, what got you into it. And as an example, you know, when I started podcasting, I had a real purpose and I still do. But when I'm exhausted, like when we started this evening, I was excited to talk to you. But before I got online with you, I was feeling tired. I'm like, I'm really tired, but you know, we're 46 minutes in and I'm feeling pumped. Like I'm totally energized and yeah. It's reminding me of why I started this.
Right.
I started it because I wanted to have these conversations with people. I wanted to take people's stories and put it out there. And so every time I do it, I think, you know, this is going to energize me and it's going to keep me going. And that's what I need. So for me, the bottom line is, why did you get into what you're doing? And if you realize that you're not feeling that passion or that love anymore, that's okay. That's okay. You need to now move on. And I don't mean that, you know, it's not easy. Like if you're an educator, you're not just going to resign as a teacher and leave. I would say that's rare. But, mm-hmm. but if that's something you need to do and you can make it work, then make it work. But if not, then I would recommend looking at your days and realizing what is it that's kind of making you feel good during the day and try to replicate that. Try to do something to get that feeling going. Try to do that for somebody else so that you can feel like not only are you getting something, but you're giving something, because teachers are very giving people. And so they need to get back sometimes too. So that's my answer to that question.
I liked your answer. It was a good answer.
Thanks for asking.
Yeah, that was level 4.
Well, I don't get many of those, so thanks. I appreciate that.
It
has been a complete pleasure talking to you, and I really am so happy that you were able to take the time and that you were able to, because you and I went back and forth, like this date, that date, this time, what works, what doesn't work. So I'm really happy that you were able to carve out some time for me, for us, and... It was a blast. You blew my mind. I appreciate it. It's a nice way to end my evening. And I'm looking forward to connecting with you some more. And I'm looking forward to sharing the information you've provided with us on the podcast with other people so they can get involved. One last thing before we go. Can you please tell us how we can connect with you if we need to or want to?
Absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at Lee Castle. You can visit me at the Digital Human Library at digitalhumanlibrary.com. We also have the Kids Guide to Canada website, and you can find us Kids Guide to Canada on Twitter at AKGTCanada. And very soon, Roland, in the fall, you're going to see an Ontario Ed student Twitter chat starting, and I'm really, really excited.
Nice.
So it's a bit of a spoiler right now. Yep, I've been working with a provincial team, so soon you'll be able to find me at On Ed student chat as well, and I can't wait to Can't wait to dive into that one.
Awesome. I can't wait for that to come out. It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed being here, and I absolutely want to follow this up with a virtual face-to-face with you. I'd love just to chat sometime.
Right on. We can do that. Perfect. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.